This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. The price of energy is going up. Temperatures are going down. Put those two trajectories together, and you've got a recipe for budget crunches for those with less ability to pay their heating bills this winter. However, plenty of resources exist for those about to feel the pinch. 57th House District Delegate-elect David Toscano convened a public information meeting on Monday, November 14th, to get the word out. Dan Daniels files this report.
With heating costs expected to be high this winter, local politicians and citizens are concerned about the hardships this might cause for local residents. Delegate-elect from the 57th House seat, David Toscano.
Gas is projected to rise about 50% in the upcoming heating season. Heating oil, about 32%. Propane, about 30%. Some of the others, folks up here may offer some different projections. These are the ones that I've seen that have been coming out of the governor's office. But suffice it to say, we know that it's going to cost a lot more to heat your home this winter than it did last year. And everybody is going to be affected by that, independent of your economic status. Every budget will be stretched. And there's some tips that everyone can take away from this session tonight that you can apply to your own budgeting. But we also know that those on fixed incomes, those with the lowest incomes in our community, those with the fewest assets, are going to be more dramatically impacted by this than other folks.
To help residents with energy costs this winter, the city of Charlottesville has established a number of programs. Charlottesville Mayor David Brown.
I want to just briefly talk about what the city currently offers and then mention some of the directions I'd like to see the city head. The city offers a budget program for residents so that they can pay their bills in more equal installments all year long instead of being shocked by a big bill in the winter or a big bill in the summertime. And secondly, we have a gas thermostat rebate program where we will offer a rebate of up to $100 for people can replace our old thermostat with a programmable thermostat, which is very effective in reducing energy use. So the furnace will automatically turn on first thing in the morning and turn off when you leave to go to work and come back on when you return home. and we encourage people to contact us and take advantage of that. Most importantly, we offer a gas assistance program where the city donates, and last year we donated $50,000 from general revenue funds, and the customers of the city gas program donate as they pay their bills. There's a little space on the gas bill which allows you to donate into a program that supplements the heating costs for low-income residents. And last year we spent $53,000 or so. We actually had a little bit left over that we can use this year for that program. And residents can apply by contacting the city. The number is 970-3222. If they would like to see if they're eligible to be assisted with their gas bills. We have a 970-3222.
That's for gas assistance.
It's also, if you would like to donate to the gas assistance program, you can call the same number. We will assist up to $400 per heating season to gas customers. And I think a couple things we may be looking at coming up. Number one, can we be more generous with the assistance we offer? You know, could we offer more than $400 in a heating season, especially given the fact that costs may rise dramatically, that $400 may not go very far? Secondly, can we increase the eligibility? Can we broaden the pool of people who would be eligible for assistance? Both of those, however, require people to call that number and contribute or to check off their gas bill and contribute. So we'll have more people willing to help with that.
The city of Charlottesville also has some recommendations on how you can keep your own energy costs low. Again, David Brown.
Things I'll mention very briefly. Last week at our city council meeting, Katie Swenson of the Charlottesville Community Design Center, who I see sitting in the audience, came and encouraged council and came and encouraged the community to attend a showing of a movie called Kilowatt Hours, which talks about not only how much energy is just being used in this country, but how if individuals take fairly simple steps to reduce their use by, for example, changing their light bulbs from incandescent bulbs to compact fluorescent bulbs, they can actually make some simple changes and save $20 or $30 in their utility bills. And I think I'd like to see us get the message out into the entire community on how you can do that. And I'd like to see us see if there are some creative ways that we can assist the low-income community in implementing those changes, both through educational efforts, but also, you know, if you're poor, buying a fluorescent bulb for $6 or $7 may not seem like a good investment of your dollars, but perhaps the city could help invest that. I'd also like the city to see, make sure the city's doing all it can to educate everyone about the things they can do around the home to conserve energy to make sure that they're being efficient. The final thing I'll mention is that the city does, which I think is a very good thing, is that during the coldest months, you know, when people really desperately need their heat, the city has a policy of not disconnecting. So even though that may cause some problems with payment down the road for the city, and it may cause some problems down the road, you know, we work with families to make sure that people don't suffer from basically not having heat.
It may come as a surprise to Albemarle County residents that they too may be able to benefit from city programs. David Brown.
About a third of the residential users of gas live in Albemarle County. I think it's about 5,300 users of gas in the county. And certainly, you know, I mean, the city contributes directly to the program. That's going to be for city residents. But in terms of the money that comes in from users of our gas, you know, we're looking for anyone who's needy to take advantage of our gas assistance.
Some federal assistance is also available. From the Department of Social Services for Albemarle County, Kathy Rulston.
It's a federal program that every Department of Social Services administers throughout the Commonwealth. It was established in 1981, so it's been around quite a few years. It's a program for low-income people with gross incomes less than 130% of poverty, and there are monthly income guidelines that people have to meet in order to qualify for that program. This program has four components, actually. One component that we're in right now is called the fuel assistance component. That really is for non-emergency heating assistance, whether it's propane or propane or oil or electric, wood, any kind of main heating source that people have. There's a crisis assistance program. It's really for emergency heating, repair and replacement assistance, inoperable furnaces, bad wood stoves, those kinds of things that people can get assistance for now. The actual emergency fuel part of that doesn't start until January, but right now people can apply for the emergency repair and replacement assistance. Then there's a component that we won't spend a lot of time on right now because that's the cooling component, and that primarily is done in the summertime that pays for cooling assistance. And then finally there's a weatherization component, and that actually is managed through the Community Energy Conservation Program. And that really deals with air infiltration kind of issues. You know, they'll put up, they'll deal with windows and caulking and replacing ductwork and weather stripping and that kind of thing. Today actually happens to be the deadline for the component that we're in right now, which is the fuel assistance program. So if people didn't get their applications in by the end of day today, which was 5 o'clock, then it's too late to apply for that program. Crisis applications can be taken through March 15th or until the money runs out, and frequently the money runs out sooner than March 15th. The benefit determination for the fuel assistance program, right now people have applied for it. All of those applications go into a central system at the State Department of Social Services. They do the calculation to determine how much funding is available for everybody. People will get notified of that starting around December the 15th. Credit authorizations will be mailed to vendors somewhere between the 9th and the 12th, and we'll get the actual determination probably starting on December the 8th. So we'll know for people that have applied for energy assistance, we'll be able to tell them how much assistance they'll be getting probably on December the 9th. In Albemarle, we've had a pretty steady increase in fuel assistance applications over the years, over the past 5 years, probably about a 34% increase in total. I don't know about the city numbers, and David, I don't know if you got anything on the city numbers. Statewide, there's been about an 8% increase this year alone in just applications. That's not approved. We don't know that number yet, but that's applications. They said, similar to what you're saying, David, that anywhere from 5 to 50% increases, depending on your fuel type. So anywhere from wood all the way up to oil and propane and electricity. A couple of the things that the state is doing, the feds are doing nothing. As far as I can tell, there's no movement at the federal level to try to increase energy assistance, increase assistance to states. I've not seen any movement in that area at all. Others out there may have heard something, but I've not seen anything. The state has asked the governor for some assistance in state funds to go into energy assistance, and we're waiting to hear on that now. We don't know about that right now. The League of Social Service Executives certainly has been active in pursuing that and asking for that from the state office and from the governor this year, but again, we're waiting to hear from them now. One of the things that the state was able to do, though, is that they got a special waiver request from the Food and Nutrition Services to increase the utility standard for food stamps starting in January. And so it doesn't help with your fuel costs directly, there'll be a slight adjustment in the fuel standard for people that are receiving food stamps, and so they'll see a slight increase in the amount of food stamps that they get, again, depending on how it all comes out in the wash in terms of their own income and resources and that kind of thing. Certainly, we depend pretty heavily on other programs in the community. You've already talked about some of them, the GAP program, the Energy Share program, the Neighbor to Neighbor program, and the CARES program. I'm looking around. I see Jewel in the audience, but I'm looking around for MACA and where the the CARES program comes in, because that's going to be a really critical one, I think, this year. The only other thing I guess I would say about this is to plug the food stamp program. In both the city and the county, we've got a lower participation rate in the food stamp program than we should. And there may be reasons for that, and I don't know what those reasons are. But if people are really hurting in their fuel assistance area, they really should also consider coming in and applying for food stamps, because that can help defray some of those costs, help get them some other help in other areas during this very important kind of crisis time for people, I think.
While these programs are helpful, the deadlines can be problematic. Tiger Fuel's David Sutton.
The December 15th deadline, which is when the private sector gets the vouchers, the fuel assistance vouchers, is very problematic as far as getting the product to the customers. It's late in the game. It's at a busy time when our trucks are already committed. And the relatively small amount of the fuel assistance dollars makes it difficult to make a full delivery. If there's only $200 allocated to a person, we like to make a delivery of 150 gallons. Today's price, that's going to be $375, something in that range. And so it's very, very difficult to schedule them. If there were some way to get those vouchers to the private sector prior to December 15th, it would greatly facilitate our ability to get the product to them before the cold weather sets in. So that would be a major improvement. Also, from our perspective, it's very difficult after December 15th if somebody calls us and says they don't have product and they don't have money, their fixed income or low income. There's really nothing left
to do with the fuel assistance program. The emergency program usually only applies to fixing the furnace or the source of heat, as opposed to providing some emergency service for getting them products. So those are two shortfalls that we see.
Rising energy prices do not necessarily benefit local energy companies. David Sutton.
First of all, I'd like to reassure everybody that Tiger Fuel does not realize the same benefits that the major oil companies realize that you've seen in the paper when you read about the fully integrated oil companies and the windfall profits. In fact, the private sector, our sector, which is dealing purely in refined product, actually has the opposite effect. As prices rise, most often the price to us rises faster than we can pass it along to our customer, and our margin gets compressed, and our profits are actually compressed during a period of rising products. I don't think that the estimates that have been bandied about here earlier, that we're going to see 20, 30, 40% increases in the price of your energy is an accurate reflection of what's going to happen from this day forward. Those projections are pretty much based on what price was last year versus what the price will be this year, as opposed to what the price is now and what it'll be for the rest of the season. In fact, right now we're in a market where the price of crude is declining. We're in a market that is really driven by weather, and the onslaught of cold weather will be what drives the price. Currently, right now, we have warmer weather than expected, not only here in Charlottesville, but in New England and in Europe and in Asia. As a result, we have a soft market. In fact, if you look at the markets today, you'll see that the speculators in both propane and crude oil and in heating oil and distillates are all shorting the market. They're betting that the price will come down, and I would agree with them. We will continue to see downward pressure on the price of energy until we have some cold weather, unless we have some catastrophic event that would drive the price. But when cold weather comes, we will see the price go up. But right now it's declining. Based on our prices today as compared to where they were last year, for heating products, they're somewhere in the range of 14 to about 18% higher, depending on whether you're buying kerosene or heating oil or propane. We provide a budget program for our customers that allows you to spread the costs out over 12 months. It's a very attractive program to people that are on fixed income or low income. We deliver a lot of the product for the fuel assistance. I don't know how many of the vouchers go to other companies, but I would guess that we probably get the lion's share of the vouchers for heating oil and propane in this market. We try very diligently to monitor the situation when we have a customer that's having difficulty. The last thing we want to see is somebody to go without product or without heat. One of the frustrations we have is that we do not have a sort of clearinghouse or a sheet that says, here are the people to call, or this is the person to tell the customer to contact. We don't have a list of churches. We will tell a customer, you know, get in touch with your church, but we don't have a list of other churches that provide that service, or other charities based in the community that would provide that service. If we could have some sort of clearinghouse or liaison to those organizations, that would help us tremendously, because we do find people every year that are in difficult situation, and it's regrettable. The most important thing anybody can do to reduce their energy cost is conservation, and I'm sure you've all seen the literature, and I think Emmett's going to give us some tips on specific things we can do to conserve. If you turn your thermostat down a degree or two, use a programmable thermostat, insulate your house, you know, use another blanket on your bed, wear a sweater while you're walking around the house. All of those things will reduce your costs. So we recommend those highly. The other thing that I recommend highly is to not panic. Quite often the consumers will panic because they see on the news or something that it's going to be an ice storm or it's going to be a snowstorm or the price of crude is going to go up $5 a barrel tomorrow or something, and then they'll say, well, I've got to have my tank filled today. That's the exact worst time to try to make the decision. The decision should be made now, when there's plenty of time to make the delivery, where there is no urgency to it, where demand is not driving the price up. Now is the time to make those decisions and to plan ahead for the winter. So I recommend that highly to anybody out there.
There is some good news for those that heat with electricity. Dominion Power's Emmett Toms.
The Virginia Electric Utility Restructuring Act that was enacted by the state legislature in 1999 here in Virginia basically has frozen electric rates in Virginia through 2011. And so our customers in the state have benefited by capped electric rates. And it's several points here that has been good for our residential as well as fixed income customers moving through a transition period to competition. So our prices have been fixed and they will not be increasing this winter. So that's some good news. Basically, what has changed in the electric industry, similar to the telephone and the other deregulated industries, is that the commodity or the electric supply can be competitively pursued from another vendor, whereas your delivery or your service to your house and your customer service and meter reading will continue to be regulated. What that means to you as a homeowner, a typical 1,000 kilowatt hour bill today based on inflation should be about $122.48. In June of 1993, you can see here on the left, your electric bill was about $90.98. It's been fixed that way and it will be that way through 2010. So there's not very many commodities, whether it's bread, milk, or eggs, you can say has stayed that way, whether it's been rent or anything. So this has been great for our fixed income as well as all of us who pay electric bill in Virginia. So you can see the bottom note here. Also, Senate Bill 651 2 years ago has moved the fuel costs to be frozen, whereas the cost for fuel, as David and others have talked about here, whether you generate electricity with coal or natural gas or use uranium, we have been typically passing that on to our consumer as the cost actually was accumulated. Now that's been frozen as well. So rates will be fixed for the next 4 years at no fuel increase as well. So just for comparative, our inflation rate should take it to about $122. If you look at this on a CPI index, look at the red line going up. Over this period of time, last 18 years, the CPI has gone up 40% in the energy market. And our electric rates have been frozen at the consistent level since 1993. So when you look at that, really that's a good move, good news for today's world of increasing cost. This cost is being absorbed by shareholders now rather than the ratepayers. So those who own stock are picking up that difference that we normally picked up as consumers or elected ratepayers. So that's where the difference is being made up there. Again, the fuel cost, you can see what fuel cost has done. Natural gas, as we all know, has been going up. We generate some electricity with natural gas, but the yellow bar being the fuel cost that went into effect in 2004 is fixed, and that's all we'll have in your electric rate will be fixed for the next 3 years with an adjustment looked at in 2007. So that is a component of the electric bill that has been frozen as well. When you look around the nation just in the last 2 years, you can see in the Midwest, you can see states that have had 25% increases in their electric rates, some on the West Coast up to 18%, but the Virginia, Carolina area, you can see in our Carolina area, it's going up, our neighbors 9% around us, but we've had fixed rates since 1993. So from an electric standpoint, this has been a good evolution for our electric customers.
And just where does all that energy get used in a typical home? Emmett Toms.
If you look at where you spend your energy dollar, 45% of it predominates in heating and cooling, so that's the biggest use of energy in your home. Water heating and dish or clothes drying and washing at 10% to 11%, that's 21%. So between heating and washing and drying clothes and the water heater, those are your three biggest users or appliances that you have in your home. So if you can control those are the big things to really control and where you spend your dollar.
Dominion Power also has some helpful suggestions for minimizing your family's energy costs. Again, Emmett Toms.
The three R's: reduce the thermostat temperature, you can reduce the use, take shorter showers, install flow restrictors, all those programs that the city has to conserve. We have recommend those to our customers as well. And insulate your hot water pipes on your hot water tank. There is a lot of heat loss in the first 3 feet of the line coming out of the hot water tank, located in heat space rather than the garage, and those kind of things, and provide a insulation blanket between the bottom of the water heater and the concrete slab or whatever. A lot of the heat's lost into the ground that way. So those are some simple things you can do. Your three major components in the heating and cooling area is infiltration or air leakage, the insulation levels of your home and your duct, and then the efficiency of the equipment. So like your miles per gallon in your vehicle, those are things to look at. But if you look at those components on infiltration, you can see that 20% is lost in the ducts, leaky ducts, 26% being the biggest, floors, walls, and ceiling, and that's where cracks seal them up. You can do a lot of good, as Kathy mentioned earlier, with some weller stripping and caulking, and those kind of things are big investments are small investments that can make big savings. So that's the place to start, stopping up the air leakage. Heat rises, so you start in the attic, work your way down. Seal all the holes where pipes or wiring may go through the attic and ceiling. That's the best place to start. You weather strip your doors and windows. So those are the cheap things you can do, and that's what maybe fixed income or renters or tenants should do with their landlord to really reduce their heating bills. And then if you're looking at a duct system replacement or upgrade, sealing the ducts, it's 20% of the heating loss is in poor duct work. So that is an area really worth your effort to take a look at. Again, you can add insulation if you don't have it, but the payback for adding insulation over existing insulation has a definite recommendation up to R38 in the attic, R19 in the floors, and insulate any ducts that are outside of heated space. There's a lot of homes that were built in the early 50s and 60s that have uninsulated ducts in the crawl space, those kind of things. They can cost justified, homeowner doing it itself, putting insulation around those ducts. And then new windows and wall insulation are typically last resort because the payback can be 20 to 25 years on that. So that's only if you're remodeling or looking at those kind of things would you do that. But do the low-cost, no-cost things first. And when you're considering the broken-down equipment, as Kathy talked about, those kind of things, when you do go make that purchase, look for the high-efficiency model. These are the things that the manufacturers generally give service rebates and warranties on. You typically can't justify just going out and replacing a aging furnace or a heating unit based on energy cost today. It's a long-term payback. But when you do make that consideration, whether it's from a breakdown or a new installation, you need to look for the high-efficiency model because that will pay for itself in energy savings. And just looking at some percentages to give you a feel for it, duct sealing is the number one thing you can do in the heating system. That saves about 20%. If you are replacing the system and go to a higher efficiency model over a standard model, you get about an 18% savings. Then next would be, plastic over the windows. It doesn't necessarily have to be storm windows, but sealing a leaky, drafty window and putting plastic over windows are as much as 13% savings. So you can do that pretty cheaply. If you have to replace your air conditioner, go with a high efficiency unit, you generally get about 11% savings. So the sealing the leaks and cracks are always the cheapest, easiest thing to do, but you can get about 8% savings from doing that. So those are things fixed and low-income people can look at, to start off with, because 8% of $220 is still a big chunk of somebody's fixed income budget. So those are some tips to go by. Do a home energy audit. You need to look around your home in the spring and in the fall, just like you do to take your annual physical. You need to look at your structure and see where there are leaks, where are things that need to be done, a tube of caulking here and there, some weather stripping. Those, in today's cost of high energy prices, certainly will be quick payback. So, and look at that duct system every year. If you have insulation fall off the duct in the crawl space, that's something that certainly should be looked at, you know, twice a year, and you have professionals that can do duct testing and sealing for you if you so desire. Change the furnace filter every month. That's the number one problem with heating equipment breakdown, is a dirty furnace filter. So a lot of trouble calls are made for that. You need to, you know, spend a dollar, a couple of dollars for the filters and buy them, you know, and replace that routinely once a month. That's the best investment you can make on your heating system. Open your curtains and blinds on the sunny side of the house to benefit from the solar heat during the sunny days, and make sure your vents in your crawl space are closed. A lot of ductwork, as I mentioned, is in crawl spaces or uninsulated, so if you have your vents open, then you're bringing in the cold air right to that. So that's another thing to do to keep that temperature in a crawl space sealed.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Daniels.